The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and have my associate Dan DuBose joining us here once again. Dan, are you on yet?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Great. Well, good morning to you, sir. As usual, I guess I should get the disclosures out of the way, the disclaimers out of the way, just because you hear Dan and I discuss certain strategies, projects, opportunities, tax issues. Don't rush out and try what you're hearing. Let's make sure that anything you thought you heard is indeed correct for your special facts and circumstances. So everybody's a little bit different. It's kind of like doing a genetic study, like I had done recently, right, Dan? We find out what our genes are specifically to us versus another person, and it's very interesting stuff, especially if you're trying to stave off the effects of aging. You know, we all age a little differently, and certain genes help us. Others may hurt us or not help us, as the case may be. And if you've got a doctor that understands these things, which unfortunately there's not many, it can change the way you age, hopefully for the better. But I would say the same thing about listening to shows like this, not just our show. I'd tell you anytime you hear financial, quote, advice, it makes sense to, hey, talk to somebody that understands your facts and whatever the subject matter is. And for those of you that want that professional to be our firm, feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER.com, and fill out the client intake forms. You'll see a link there at the top right, and then you can schedule a call at the link right next to it, and we'll be happy to take some time to chat with you and find out if we can assist your efforts to build wealth, whether it's retirement wealth or otherwise, using real estate predominantly. That's what we do. That's what we work with. That's the math we understand. We don't sell real estate investments. We may be investing in some that you're also interested in which case you'll know before you pull the trigger. Want to make sure you understand that, you know, there may be a conflict if you think of it that way, and you know, you can do as you will. Dan, looking in the news this week, I pulled a couple stories that relate to what's going on with the national real estate market, and then one of those articles drills down to the I believe it's the top five metros, and I'd say there's some interesting content there. You want to bring one of those up? Which one do you think we should talk about first?
You know, one of the things they're talking about is how much rent is. You know, it's $2,305 average rent or median rent across the country. $2,305. They're talking about how renting may even be cheaper than buying these days because of interest rate increases or whatever, but the fact that rent is that high just amazes me. I guess it's because I'm an old codger guy. You know, $2,300 seemed like an awful lot of money to be putting out just for rent.
Well, Yeah, but of course, I think wages, the people that are able to pay that level of rent are doing pretty good too in this day of remote working. Maybe working a couple or three jobs with remote capabilities. You know, I know I've seen articles over the last couple of years where that's been discussed, and of course, that's not what Employer One probably expects, although who knows, maybe that's one of the perks, you know, to take certain jobs. But the increase is one thing. Let's say it gives us some data on rent increase, and then it's got decreases. Let's talk about the decreases first. And by the way, the decrease on the number you just cited, the 2305 median, that's actually 5% higher than a year earlier. But when you compare it to the end of the first half of 2022, that's when we saw the median rent had declined almost 6%. But which cities, Dan, were involved there? And give some
number
of the other.
Indianapolis, Indiana, which I think is. Yeah. Kind of unusual from what we're seeing in the offering market these days. A lot of people seem to be jumping on Indiana or Indianapolis area. We've seen a lot of activity there.
Yeah, and to be clear, the median in Indianapolis is not really anywhere close to 2305. It's about 1700, which is still, you know, for that submarket, pretty impressive. The overall rent increase for that period was 30.8%. That's even more of note, I would suggest. That's a huge rental income bump. That's not pro forma, Dan. That really happened, apparently, according to CNBC or whoever they bought this data from, right?
Right.
Striking. What other cities are of note?
Pittsburgh in there at number five. Yeah, it seemed like they're all the northern cities where they had these increases and the decreases. It's pretty amazing to me that it's still that many that have that big a increase. One of the things they talked about later in that article is Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas, our little home capital here in Texas, has a 35% rent increase. And they talk about the suburbs of Austin being Georgetown and Leander and even New Braunfels, they call the suburb of Austin. You know, all these cities are experiencing, the ones they listed or have significant plant openings or job increases. So it's really active over in that area right now. And we've seen quite a bit of activity in PPMs in Leander area, I believe it was. We saw one or two we talked about over the last year or so. So Austin is a very popular, you know, Texas in general is pretty popular these days from people moving in from those other states where they got high taxes.
Yeah, but, you know, as popular as Austin is, did you notice which city and area, wasn't the north, had what I think to be the most incredible average rents or median rents? The increase wasn't as impressive, but Naples, Florida, or Marco Island, the median rent at the end of 2022, this number almost, at first I thought maybe this was an annual number, $6,448. That can't just be apartments, right? I don't think this report said specifically the apartment market. We tend to read that into it because we just looked at a transaction that was taking place in Indianapolis, and I think the number here, the 1700, wasn't it in line, Dan, with what they were pro-forming on that?
Yeah, it was. It is.
Yeah, but almost $6,500. That's a special place. It's got to be, right?
Must be.
So anyway,
maybe that's because the rent increases are on vacation rentals and such as that included. I don't know, man. That's awful.
Yeah, well, it's certainly got the impact of that. You know, the I guess the when you talk about cheaper to rent than it is to buy, I mean, it's been that way many times over the last, what, 20 to 30 years, but it seems like it's been a while since we've mentioned that due to the recent changes in the economy. And there's a comment here by one of the market intelligence data gatherers. It was a year ago, it was cheaper to buy than rent in 60% of the markets that they analyze, without going down the list. And the quote is, "You simply can't overstate the impact that higher financing costs have had on home ownership." And I suspect that's exactly what the data would show. And rates, even though mortgage rates have recently cooled a bit, they've more than doubled in 2022, which has never happened in 1 year, according to Freddie Mac, one of the big loan insurance agencies, I guess you would say. I guess they're they're not an agency, are they, Dan? Aren't they a private company that the government kind of has? Yeah, I've forgotten the relationship, but bottom line, there's no question that having monthly mortgage payments 45 to 50% higher, that's huge, for a home purchase, even though the prices of homes have slowed as well, that's still a huge factor in terms of creating the shift that would allow someone to rent cheaper than buy. It's always a matter of timing, right, Dan? Seems like that never changes. Timing with real estate is seemingly always important, whether it's going down or going up. And I guess a matter of need plays into that, the demand. Dan, let's move to the second article. Let me see. I'm trying to remember which one it was. You have it handy there?
I do not. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. Let's see. Here it is. It's housing demand and low supply in multifamily real estate. And let me get this in front of me. Just the overview of this article. U.S. population is on the move, resulting in key shifts for multifamily markets across the country, which kind of plays into what we were just discussing in the other article. The panic-induced shutdowns forced many to reconsider their housing choices, and the results are staggering. You know, this article details fastest-growing cities, underlying growth factors, and what this means, more importantly, for apartment investors. And, you know, again, this is always subject to the specific markets. And I see here, you know what, I didn't pull down the whole article, so I think I've kind of just given you the overview, and that's all I have for the moment. But when I did look at it online, meant to download it, it was some of the same markets. The numbers were generally similar. It supported most of the data in the other article. And I would suggest to you that looking at transactions currently taking place in the apartment arena, as we do on a weekly basis, in fact, we'll speak about one or two of them here on the last half of the show today. You know, the apartment market has been strong. It's staying strong. There's no question there's some headwinds right now that we're fighting with regard to the financing. Same issue as single family, just a different window into the same room, maybe. You know, structuring the debt is different. You've got lenders that are now executing provisions that typically are in most loans, where they can unilaterally require the borrower to reserve more money to make future loan payments. As these rates tighten or the market softens, I mean, I had one project that I noticed. I was reading an update on it where the monthly, I believe it was the $15,000 reserve went to $30,000 just because the lender said so. And that's tough. I mean, when you're talking about taking $30,000 out of cash flow effectively to reserve to make sure that lender's going to get paid. And I understand why lenders think that way. You know, what's the expression, Dan? The golden rule, I think we call it. How does that go? Do you remember that?
Then that has the gold makes the rules.
That's exactly right. And unfortunately, that's the price of doing business, or that's the cost of doing business. I tell you what, let's pivot. We've got a few minutes before our break. I wanted to talk about what's the topic I love talking about every week, Dan? One of them. Starts with an R. Two words, RC. Roth conversions. Yeah, Roth conversions. And, you know, we always just kind of assume people know what we're talking about and naturally want to run out and start converting your pre-tax dollars into Roth, which you really should. But let me give you kind of a tit for tat reasons you want to. Well, first of all, how does it work? And then secondly, why might you be interested? And then thirdly, why might you be less interested? And then lastly, we'll talk about how you handle the taxes. First of all, the in terms of how does it work, a Roth we call it an in-plan conversion, allows you to elect to convert any or all of your pre-tax assets to be Roth assets. And again, I know, you know, we make this sound like it's simple, it's easy. It may or may not be, depends on where your funds are stashed, but it's not because they may be invested at the moment. In other words, this can happen in your 401 plan that has that option. Now, many employers don't allow you to do it with their 401 plans, but it's getting to be fewer and fewer. I think approximately 70% now, maybe 65 to 70% of the bigger employer 401 plans allow Roth conversions. But again, you can convert any or all. There's no income limit. It's not like making a Roth contribution. You can convert as much as you want. Since the Build Back Better Act did not pass, that had provisions in it that was going to eventually limit who could do Roth conversions. You wouldn't be able to do them if you had more than $450,000 in income. Thankfully, that act or that legislation failed to pass. And even if it had, there was a 10-year window where you could still do your conversions without regard to how much annual income you had, which tells me, and I've said this before, there's a lot of congressmen that must have had pre-tax dollars where they needed some time, Dan, to get those converted over. That would seem to be likely. It's kind of like all the Congress people that are doing their insider trading right now before those rules get changed, if they get changed. It's insane that we allow our congressmen to trade on stocks of companies that they may be involved in regulating. Is that not unbelievable, Dan?
I think it is unbelievable. They at least put it into a blind trust where they don't know what's happening.
Yeah, and is that that's right up there with allowing the heads or higher-ups in government agencies like Mr. Gottlieb, who was with FDA, and I can't remember if he was the head of FDA or second in command, but you know which board he sits on right now, Dan?
Pfizer, I believe it is.
Pfizer, is that what you said? Pfizer?
Yeah.
Is that not unbelievable that we allow that? It's like a steady stream of jobs are at the pharmas for the folks that were basically in charge of covering. Now we're finding out all the things that, I don't know if you saw the Project Veritas video this week where they interviewed one of the directors that actually said, now he's saying he was lying to impress his date. I think the Project Veritas folks, you know, put a a ploy, let's call it a bait and switch, to get him to talk. And basically he admitted that Pfizer was doing gain of function. They didn't call it that. They called it like enhanced something. I've forgotten the term, where basically they could control the next variant and then they would miraculously have the vaccine already in place to where we could now pay. Oh, yeah, this is on video. Now, it's being taken down everywhere, but I saw it. It was on Tucker Carlson the other night. It's like that's right up there with insider trading by congressmen as far as I'm concerned. I just find it inconceivable that we allow that or have allowed it, and I guess everybody's acting like, oh, it needs to change. Well, you watch. You see if it changes. I'd be surprised because it's the same. We've been saying for years, every time there's a new rule passed by Congress, they exempt Congress. Any kind of equal opportunity employment or a lot of tax rules doesn't apply to Congress like it would if it were you and my small company. Anyway, so back to the conversion of Roth, because I want to get through this so we can move on to review a couple transactions. By converting all or part of your assets from pre-tax to Roth, it gives you a chance to build tax-free retirement income, and it may help you manage your tax liability. And that's true. It's not just your tax-free income. It also may help you avoid paying tax on your Social Security, and it also may help keep your IRMA premium down on your Medicare. And not going to go into those details. We can another time. But there is a cost of doing it. And the cost is that any amount we convert gets treated as taxable income in the year of conversion. So we'll talk about that here in a minute. So how are taxes, it's in the section we'll talk about last, how are taxes handled for Roth in-plan conversion? And a lot of that depends on how your funds are invested at the point you pull the trigger on the conversion, which we've talked about this many times. So now, why might you be interested? Well, we've kind of already alluded to most of the reasons. A Roth conversion may be of interest to you if you expect your tax rate to be higher in the future. And if I was in person, I would ask the question to see how many people would raise their hand on the question of, when you get to retirement, do you think your tax rate's going to be lower or higher than it is now? And most hands that go up would be for the, they think it's going to be lower than currently when they have a job. And they're not thinking about a little thing called required minimum distributions, which that's on pre-tax assets. You don't have those. Well, you don't have them where they're taxable on Roth. And in fact, you don't have them. I think, Dan, didn't Secure Act 2 keep the provision? I know it went back and forth, but did it not eliminate Roth RMDs? I'm pretty sure it did.
Right, it did.
It was in the final version. Right. So most people that have pre-tax assets, I mean, I mentioned last week a client that had, I don't know, $3 or $4 million in IRA money and was getting hit with $250,000 to $300,000 worth of taxable income each year, and never made that kind of money all during his working years. You know, college professor, you know, no way did he ever see $250,000 to $300,000. So you can imagine what a shock that is. And why someone in that position would have more than likely come out way ahead by converting to Roth. And somebody might ask, well, should they still do it? Well, maybe, maybe not. Depends on what the plan is for the heirs and whether that matters, because you could still convert. There is a 5-year clock that would be ticking, but that's dealt with by the rules as well. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think this has changed under the Secure Act 2, but I'm pretty sure the heirs would be able to take those funds either with no additional tax, or they simply add them to their RMD requirement on their front, so that it's not as punitive as you might think just because the 5-year rule didn't get met. So first is you expect your rates to be higher. That would be a reason to get to Roth now. Second would be if you're interested in diversifying your assets based on the tax status of your different tax buckets, taxable, maybe low tax, and then lastly tax-free would be the three buckets that most of us have. The last reason it might be of interest to you would be the plan to keep the money, well, I mentioned the five-year rule, to keep the money invested for at least 5 years after the conversion. Now, that assumes you don't pass away within the 5 years, and of course, none of us would implement the strategy thinking that would occur, of course. And so what are the reasons why we might not be interested, or you might be less interested in Roth in-plan conversions? And those would be you expect your tax rate to be lower than it would be at the time of conversion, which, we're sitting here on the lowest tax rates in literally our lifetime, Dan, or close to it in your case. And so why wouldn't you want to convert now if you're, I'm not going to say young or old. I'm just going to say if you have the cash to pay the tax rates or that we have now, to pay the tax at the tax rates you have now, it's almost assured they're going to be lower than when we get out past 2029 and 30 with the mess the federal deficit is in. Dan, what's that number? Still, I don't think it's changed except went up a little, relatively speaking, on the just the unfunded liability that the U.S. has. Not the funded part. The funded part is what, $31 trillion, $32? That's not even funded, but that's included in the annual. That's the part we've put on our books, let's say, right?
$32 trillion,
but the unfunded is still 175,
maybe 200 trillion.
Close to 175, according to usdebtclock.org. And, of course, of that, $35 million is Medicare. I think $24-25 is Social Security. That's not even half. So there's a lot out there that's going to cause the math to dictate higher taxes or less spending. I guess I shouldn't overlook, we could get together and decide to spend less. When's the last time that happened, Dan?
Never.
Yeah,
maybe,
I think that's
right
the right
after
answer.
World War II.
Maybe, because we did go out into a lot of debt to handle World War II. Okay, lastly, how are taxes handled for a Roth in-plan conversion? Since a Roth in-plan conversion converts pre-tax into after-tax, you got to pay your tax bill on the pre-tax contributions that you've made and any earnings associated that you're also going to convert to Roth associated with those contributions. In other words, after you contribute them, you invested them, and you generated income that hasn't been taxed. Income taxes do not have to be withheld at the time of the conversion. So, you've got some time to fund it, depending on what your tax liability is otherwise for the prior year and the current year. And you could incur something that we don't worry about in Texas. You could incur some sizable state taxes as a result of doing the conversion. And, of course, the federal we've mentioned. There's no question. We look at optimizing the amount that we pull the trigger on with regard to the conversion. We don't try to do it all in 1 year. We look at the bracket you're in already with your income, and then we try to stay down below the 22 to 24% brackets, higher if it makes sense, because let me tell you, even if you're in the 37% bracket, 37 looks a lot better than 75, and that's probably where it's headed, somewhere in that ballpark, maybe 70, depends on how far, if we just Band-Aid it or if we fix it. Per CBO's analysis of quite a few years back. But in any event, we strongly recommend that you pay the conversion tax from non-retirement assets. Otherwise, you're cannibalizing those retirement assets that have tax favored status.
Retirement assets.
That's right. So anyway, we've got more questions that we're going to punt to next week to take, but those are the first three, and we'll come back and talk about how often can I convert? Is there a limit on how much I convert? Can I change my mind after I convert? Does my spouse have to approve of it? Can I make withdrawals of my converted Roth amounts? By the way, that last question about your spouse approving, whether or not it's a legal requirement, it's a requirement. For those of us that are married, I think we understand what I mean by that. But what's the expression, Dan? Happy wife, happy life, I think. My wife reminds me of that one every once in a while. Maybe it's an Asian thing. But anyway. Okay, well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a few minutes. And let's talk about one or maybe both of the PPMs we were looking at this week. We'll be right back here in a few minutes with more of the Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross and Dan Dubose, CPAs.
Come and ask me and ask you what your secret. With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words. Better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
The Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, focuses exclusively on helping investors understand the current options for investing. The syndication arena has changed. You can now take advantage of direct online investing options without expensive upfront membership fees. Nathan Ross, CPA, discusses these options and more, including the math involved with partnership selection, reporting, and performance. On the Syndication Math Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, Sundays at 7 a.m. right here on KSEV.
Okay, welcome back to the last half of the Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and today's guest, Dan Dubose. We've been talking about assorted topics, rental rates up and down, depending on where you're at in the country, and also talked about the Roth conversion further. Why we might want to do it, why we might not. You know, one thing I forgot to mention, Dan, that was of interest here, I think it was 2 weeks ago I first started seeing articles, and I think we discussed it, but the price of eggs has shot up. You've seen that, right? What is it, 65% I think they've gone up?
Yeah, I was at Walgreens the other day to buy something, and I saw eggs $9.99 a dozen.
That is crazy. I was going to say, I thought I saw they were almost a dollar a piece.
Yeah.
They've they've gone up over here, Southeast Asia, which, you know, you would expect they would. It was some type of, I want to say, well, I'm not going to say it was some type of flu, some type of bird flu. I'm not sure from where, but where do most of them come from, right? Although we seem to have plenty of eggs here, so I'm not sure what part of Asia. But the thing that I've never seen, this was a first for me, and I guess it makes sense, and I should have read the article to understand exactly the context, but it said people are not only buying chickens, they're renting chickens, like renting an apartment. Is that not crazy? I'm assuming... Yeah. They're fine. You know, there's farmers that are actually going to take care of them because they are a messy pet, quote unquote.
How do you
pro forma that? Say again.
How do you pro forma that?
Yeah, good question. But I'll tell you, we had some chickens for about a week and a half over here. My wife, I think her brother gave us a couple chickens that were putting out beautiful eggs twice a day. And of course, my wife being the clean freak that she is, was cleaning those pens twice a day, and then she called me about a week and a half. Well, she decided to go buy some baby chicks because the adults were doing such a great job. And by the way, Dan, do you need a rooster to make eggs? I love asking that question because so many of
us. No, you don't need a rooster to make eggs.
Well, I didn't know that. I didn't grow up on a farm, and that was something my wife had great delight in understanding when I ask her, well, where's the rooster? How are we getting these eggs? And anyway, if we had argued, it'd been another loss on my side of the ledger. Anyway, so she went and bought about 10 baby chicks and was so proud of them, had them in a different cage than the parent, or not the parents, but the adults. Unfortunately, the cage at the top had a hole big enough for a cobra to crawl in, which is what happened. Cobras love chickens, smelled the chickens, I guess. And my wife went out one Friday morning and saw a bunch of dead chicks and noticed that there was something in the cage. And she, let's just say she was not afraid. She was mad. And I had to call her back. We were on FaceTime. And sure enough, she called security and they came running with a snake stick, which I guess tells you they do this more than, infrequently, and came out with about a 7-foot Thai cobra hanging over that snake. And
wow.
It was serious enough that I Googled the different, I Googled cobras and found out the Thai cobra is like the second or third most dangerous. You've got about 15 minutes if you get bitten before your respiratory system shuts down. And I tell you, it got my attention. I've checked hospitals on both sides of our area to make sure they've got what they need, and they assure me they do. But anyway, I don't know why I'll deal with what's in the food chain above or below it. Just don't give me any snakes. Let's let the snakes go. And I have friends that say, you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, rodents aren't all that bad, right? So anyway, okay, so let's talk about, we're just going to have time for one transaction. I believe the one you want to talk about, Dan, is a 506B, so we'll give Skank a little detail since we're not supposed to promote or otherwise offer that information unless you're a client and you've already connected with that syndicator, and then you're welcome to forward the transaction to us.
This is a little interesting. I think it's over on the East Coast. I don't know how much detail you want to throw out there, but it's on the east side of the United States, and it's got a very low interest rate, a fixed interest rate below 3%, which I think is major significant to this market these days.
Yeah, what is it, five? I think it's 5 years, though, right? So it's not
six,
indefinite.
Yeah, but it's yeah. It's
but that's
there.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It's a little better than 60% long to cost, which is pretty good too, I think. It's got a very low fix-up cost, so it's not our rehab cost, so it's low relative to purchase price. So I'm not sure how you would classify that as a value add or not, because there's, you know, rent's only increasing, and I say only, it's still a pretty significant, about a 27% increase over 3 years. So evidently they're buying it in a almost fixed up. What's that, about a 5% rehab cost, which I think is pretty low when you consider a value add, is it not, Nathan? I mean, could you call that a value?
Again, depends on a few other math components there, but I would say 5%. I don't know that I'd say it's a light value add, but it's sure not a heavy. I've seen a lot more than that percentage-wise spent, but
They're still going in at the real low cap rates and coming out at, I think, still a very low cap rate, 4.5%.
What is they're buying at what and selling at what, or pro forma?
Buying at just under 4 and coming out at 4.5.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, that wouldn't bother me if it had a 5 EMX or equity multiple, but when you've got a slim equity multiple, and I don't know, did you have a chance to look at what they were thinking that might be, Dan?
No, I don't see it in my numbers here. I'm sorry.
Let's see. I thought I had that handy, but I don't think the equity multiple was, anything to jump up and down about. And the problem is, if you don't hit the cap rate, the sensitivity on the equity multiple is pretty striking. Oh, here it is. Let me pull this up and take a look here. Go ahead, Dan. Move on. I'll circle back to you here in a second.
Cash on cash is running right at 6%, so that's not all that bad. At 5.5% to 6%. Coming in the first year, actually, so that's not bad. It's a operating property, it sounds like, 5% going in, cash on cash.
Yeah. The cash on cash wouldn't be affected by the cap rate, on the exit, but that's one component, obviously. I don't know. You know what? If the cash on cash, I didn't look at how they depicted it, but if it's a average annual return, well, then it would be, because the exit dollars are usually layered in there, right? So unfortunately, the projection that we have access to doesn't go out to the fifth year, but if you looked at it by the end of the third year, let's see, what did you say the exit cap rate was? Was it 4.5, Dan?
Yeah. 4.5%.
Okay, that's what they're using at the end of years 1, 2, and 3 also. And so what's the amount of the capital being raised? Was it a million something?
Oh,
no, it's more than a million. So, yeah, how much total did you have that?
Purchase is just under $25 million.
Yeah, I've got the PPM here. Let me look at
$10 million. About $9 million.
How much is it?
Being almost $10 million being raised.
Let's see. The one that I'm looking at is $17,250. Now, it's a two-property portfolio. Is it possible? That's the minimum. The maximum is $22 million. So, I don't know. They're a long way from the 2.0 level that we'd like to see. So, again, I understand, and I guess we should say at this point, we understand deals are all over the board. It's not fair to say there's no transactions that are generating higher equity multiples. We just talked about one last week, in the RV market. That's pro formaing at least to have much higher, but the issue becomes, you've got several math metrics that are intertwined. And if you say, well, you know, I want to do a deal that's got a equity multiple that's, say, half or three quarters of what we would normally strive to find. In a vacuum, that's not necessarily a bad choice compared to putting your money in a T-bill, right? On the other hand, if it's based on assumptions that include unreasonable exit cap rates, then what do you really have? And the prospect that you give somebody your money, you know, a syndicator, to use it for 5 years, and then at the end of the day, you simply get your money back, okay, we acknowledge that's not the same as losing money. On the other hand, if you understand what rational cap rates are on exit, you would probably take a pass on a transaction that had a weaker equity multiple combined with exit cap rate that is higher than what many people think exists in the market. And I know, Dan, you mentioned last week you've got a connection that does appraisals of commercial real estate, and I think you said they're, for the most part, using 6.5% exit cap rates, correct?
On multifamily, that's right.
Right. And so if you compare 6.5 with this project at 4.5, I can tell you right now, you're not getting much more than your money back. I'm not going to say maybe not that. There's too many, you know, hops in between there. But I'm just telling you, you run sensitivity analysis, as I have, on 2% spreads, and you'll be shocked at how little money you get back on a transaction. And of course, some transactions you'd get less than you put in. Just depends. But I don't know. 6.5 is likely a lot closer to reality than 4.5 is, unless there's no recession. Who all now is saying that there's not going to be a recession except the White House, Dan? I mean, I think even, you know, Jamie, is it Dimon or Diamond? I can't remember. Different people pronounce it different ways. He's saying there's going to be a recession. Even Lawrence Sumner, I believe, the former head of the Treasury and current, I believe he's on the current White House economic advisor list, and I believe even he has indicated it's likely, or he feels, you know, it's getting ready to happen. I don't know how you keep seeing some of the metrics and think otherwise. Spending, consumer spending, just what, 2 days ago was reported to have dropped. I think it was 20% of 1%? Would that be 0.2 of a percent, I believe?
20
Did you
basis
see that
points.
Stat? You said 200?
20 basis points.
20. Well, again, I see basis points punted around in different contexts, but let's just say consumer spending has gone down. Layoffs are going to continue. And I know people say, well, you know, it's only tech jobs. Well, maybe that's true for the moment, but it's not true. In fact, I just saw, who was it? Some company that's, you know, more of a manufacturing company that had announced, it wasn't a huge layoff, but they're coming. And, you know, that's what the head of the Fed has said is going to happen, right? I mean, he so much as indicated, that's what has to happen to get inflation to cool far enough. So, you know, you lay that into these, you know, pro forma assumption sets on these syndications. And, you know, the thing that I guess is a little bit frustrating is that syndicators, and I'm not picking on this syndicator, I'm just talking generally, way up at the forest level, they've got all the cover in the world with the economy right now where they can put a rosier than rational pro forma out, and later you watch, they'll be blaming the recession. Well, you know, we're here now. Why not work with the assumption that your exit cap rate is going to be in the 6 or 7% range, which is probably, we hope we're getting that, and see what your numbers look like in that case. And this is kind of like the spending and debt ceiling quandary that we talked about last week, where nobody's responsible. It's like, you know, well, the last Congress is the one that spent the money, but we got to pay for it now. We can't not pay for things that we charged on the nation's credit card. But unwilling to negotiate or have any discussion about cutting spending going forward. Forget about going backward. We'll agree on that. You can't go change that. Although you can in some cases. But bottom line is, I just really get frustrated looking at some of these transactions when you know it. As Bob Dole would say, you know it, we know it, and the American people know it. I think it's how he used to say it. And I think anybody that's even remotely related to commercial real estate understands that, you know, this financing structure we have and choices is problematic. What else on this one, Dan? What's the asset class on this? I think you said it. It better be an A at these prices, right?
Excuse me. It's definitely not an A.
Say again?
I don't think it's an A.
Well, it's $220,000 per unit.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But it's in Florida too, so that's I just shouldn't have said that, I guess. But it's on the it's a high cost area these days, as far as that other article we read. You know, things are
right
more expensive right on that side of the world.
Well, and it's not this. Well, I guess it's got scale collectively between, this is a two property portfolio, I think we may have mentioned, but let's see. I was trying, there was something else I was, oh, rental revenue increase. Let's see, we go, how much was it?
27% over 3 years.
Yeah, over 3 years, you know, I guess for the market this is in, that's probably not irrational, at least based on what we just talked about earlier in the show, right? Well, in any event, we're coming up on just a little over a minute left, Dan. So, you know, once again, appreciate you coming along for the ride this week. And we always enjoy the banter about news and projects, et cetera. And we'll be back next week, same time, same station, and hopefully have still more deals to talk about. And we'll pick back up on the last half of the list of questions about Roth conversions in an effort to further educate and motivate people to take advantage of the low tax rates we have at the moment. Anything else to add, Dan, before we hear the music?
No, just have a good week. We'll see you next Sunday.
Yeah, well, hear me next Sunday, you bet.
Yeah.
Same place, same time, same station. We'll see you next Sunday, 7 a.m. here on AM 700, Central Time, that is. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEV.